Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Hello. Hello?
Susan, can you hear me?
Yes, indeed. How about you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Oh, great. Beautiful day today.
It is. I apologize. We were having a little technical difficulties trying to get this together, and I think I may have finally got it. I was hitting all kinds of wrong buttons, but I'll go back and... I'll go back and edit the few minutes out that we lost of trying to get you on. So, but how are you doing this morning?
I am doing great. Up and working on issues related to corrections. This has become my life.
I know, right? It seems like every day there's something new, or we're learning something new every day about something that's going on in the Department of Corrections.
It's a gift that keeps on giving.
That's right. So I guess I wanted to start off, kind of kick off the show, and I don't know if you have the numbers. I'll try to get the numbers as well. The latest numbers from yesterday that was released by the Department of Corrections on the COVID-19, the number that the department has released. And I don't know about you, and I've been saying for a while that I don't know how accurate the numbers are that they're releasing. I've heard information from several reliable sources that it may be that there's a lot more that has been tested that they just haven't received those results back. And then some that has not been tested. So what are you hearing on that?
I'm hearing the same thing. In fact, I've heard from some facilities where the inmates have been told, you're not worthy of a test. It breaks your heart.
Oh, it does. It does.
Symptomatic inmates being told they're saving the test for someone better.
Right. Do we know or have you heard of what exactly, how dire the symptoms have to be in order for them to even get tested?
I do not know. I know this anecdotally. One of the ladies whose loved one is at Phillips State Prison said mm-hmm. that when she talks to her loved one, she hears all this coughing in the background. That's disturbing.
Oh, it is. And we've been hearing these just horror stories on family members and, you know, just talking to their loved ones at these facilities. And, I think I read one account where the loved one didn't even want their person to know that they were even maybe even possibly sick and was trying to, you know, hurry up and get off the phone because they didn't want that person to be worrying. So, I mean, it's just very disturbing on what's taking place in the department.
Indeed it is. Now, regarding the numbers from they did not update yesterday because it was a holiday. Because, you know, nobody gets sick on a holiday.
Right.
The most recent numbers confirmed, now that is definitely that they've been tested. Staff 45, offenders 46. I'm not quite sure, you know, the numbers that keep showing up on this, the newly added recovered cases, 3 staff, 6 offenders. All right, that 45-46, that's 91 people, and they're saying 9 have recovered.
Right. And
wow.
And do we know do we even know what the recovery process is? I mean, I know that, and from my understanding, and just for the listeners, and I'll kind of let you chime in as well, but from my understanding, from talking to several people, is once they show symptoms, they're put in isolation until the results come back, and I believe that nurses have to go down several times a day and check temperatures and kind of wait. It's a waiting game until those results are back. But do we know what type of treatment, or have you heard of any type of treatment that they're actually getting once the case is confirmed?
No. I read there was a post the day before yesterday that the Department of Corrections had been given 200,000 doses as a gift of the medication that's being used, the one that's used for lupus that they're giving for this. And then that's given in association with a Z-Pak, the zithromycin pack. But no, I don't know what recovery looks like or what symptomatic looks like. You know, here we are in mid-April with pollen pouring down on us. Now, I realize I go outside and a lot of the inmates aren't getting any yard time. But, you know, I'll cough a couple of times a day. That's normal stuff.
Yeah, right.
So if we can learn from what happened last weekend at Metro TC, apparently we're talking about high fever, 103, 104. In an adult, that's a very sick person. And a terrible cough, but not productive, just the cough.
Right.
But how sick is sick enough? Don't know. And people aren't—they aren't gonna tell us.
No. And I think that, you know, and we know that because it took them forever to even start releasing their numbers on actual cases inside of the inside of these facilities. And you know, for a department to actually, for anybody to expect the Department of Corrections to just start releasing those information. But I think that the outcry was from all these groups and, you know, social media outcry and or whatnot was helped to get these numbers released. And, you know, like I said, I don't really trust their numbers. I don't think they're very accurate, but we do have something to go on. And what's also disturbing in these numbers are the cases that that looks like to be on the rise at Macon State. I think that, you know, they've been locked down for, and correct me if I'm wrong, Susan, they've been locked down at least 5 weeks, I think. And the numbers are just, and the numbers are just completely rising. And I'm trying to pull those numbers up now. But the numbers it's unbelievable on those numbers that's showing out of Macon State.
What the website shows is 2 staff, 7 inmates, but that's confirmed. And, you know, the prisons have the ability, for those that have essentially a small medical facility there, they have the ability to be fairly secretive about the numbers.
Right. Yeah, and like I said, it's just, and I'm looking at that list now. I mean, I think the biggest shock, I think, this week while we're staying on the numbers, I guess the biggest shock this week was the Johnson State Prison numbers. It says two confirmed for staff and 13 offenders confirmed for the COVID-19.
Yeah. That's...
So, you know. Yeah, it's, and I don't, like I said, we really don't know what the department is doing. From my understanding, Johnson is not locked down. So I don't know. It's secretive on exactly what they're doing to try to stop this from spreading inside the facility. I mean, you know, we learned this week also that the Department of Corrections is still transferring people from facility to facility. They're not doing it the traditional way as far as late night transfers, you know, in the big, I guess, Bluebird and Greyhound buses, but they're actually actually transferring guys and through vans now to different facilities. So, you know, if that's not an indication on how much they're taking this serious, then I don't know what it is.
You know, we know that they had said initially that they were not going to do transfers, but they've continued the entire time. Even 3-4 weeks ago, there were some cases where a van went from one facility to another. Ten inmates get off. They put them directly into population during the night. One of those was symptomatic, and they went and pulled all 10 of them back out. But they had, they in the population when they got there.
Right. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Susan. I didn't want to cut you off. Go ahead.
It just seems that it wouldn't take a rocket scientist to come up with the idea of quarantining, even if you have to transfer people for safety reasons. Then quarantine them for 2 weeks. If the prison can't keep people in a cell for 2 weeks, something's terribly wrong.
Yeah, and you know, and they have the resource to do it. I just think, you know, it's a dangerous practice for them to continue to. I mean, we know that they're not testing everyone that has symptoms. We know that. And we've heard the stories that there people are complaining about being sick, and they're just telling them that it's nothing, or it's a cold, or it's nothing.
Yeah.
So we know that. I mean, we know that that's going on. I think myself and you have actually heard that this is going on. You know, but I think it's dangerous that for them to continue to transfer these people, and they not even know if they're. You know, if they're positive or negative for the COVID-19. But, you know, trying to get through to the Department of Corrections and to make this, make them, you know, to have our voices heard and concerned, I mean, they're not very interested in hearing anything as far as that goes.
My son works for a national company, and he drives a work van. And as of 2 weeks ago, they no longer can ride in the same vehicle. They have to go in individually. Even if they're going three guys to a site, they have to drive individually. Their company's not letting them be cooped up together 3 feet apart. And
right.
Therein is the problem in these vans. You can go in Georgia.
Right, and I think we lost Susan there for some reason. I think her phone went out, but I'm sure she'll call back in just a second. Yeah, it's showing on my screen that her call dropped. So we'll try to get Susan back here in just a second. Right now, I think that we have Larry Woods on that's been holding for quite a while, and I just looked at the screen, so I apologize for having Larry waiting that long. We're going to actually bring Larry in, and if Susan can call us back, showing on my screen that call dropped, so if she can call back, I'll bring her back in. But we're going to bring Larry Woods in now. He is the founder and director of Justified Prison Ministries. He's actually helping us get our soap and things distributed to the population in prison. So I'm going to try to bring Larry in, and hopefully we don't have the same problem that we had with Susan trying to get her in here. Larry, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Hey, how's it going?
Man, it's going good. How about yourself?
I'm doing good, man. Doing good. It's good to talk to you.
Yes, sir. Good talking with you as well.
So, kind of give us an update. And I think Susan's back with us. Susan, are you with us?
I am.
Okay. It said that the call dropped, but I actually have Larry Woods on right now as well. So we're going to kind of bring him in. And real quick, I know he has limited time. So, but Larry, yeah, give us an update. I know you got the soap and things this week to be distributed out. So kind of give us an update on kind of how you're thinking you're going to handle that thing.
What I'm actually wanting to do, I want to hit the two prisons that have been hit the hardest just recently, which is Lee State Prison and Johnson State Prison. My plans are to – I'm hoping they will be receptive to the idea of us bringing the soap in and distribute exactly what they need for each inmate to at least get a bar of soap. I reached out yesterday, didn't realize it was a holiday with the prison system. So naturally, I did not hear back from either of those prisons. So I'm going to reach out again this coming Monday. And I really want to get that in their hands by the end of next week. I'm ready to roll out Monday and deliver it if they're ready for me to come and bring it. So if they say no, then I'm just going to go to the next on the list. I just really the ones that, like I said, are getting hit the hardest, I feel that they kind of need it at this point the most. So that's kind of where I'm at, just kind of. Yeah, leaving it in the Lord's hands and hoping that they will say, yes, man, please bring it, and we're going to take it and distribute it to those facilities.
Right, and I did not notice until last night, and I understand, and Susan can maybe kind of chime in on this as well, but I think there was someone last night or maybe a few weeks ago that actually tried to donate some soap to Macon State Prison, and Susan can maybe touch on this a little bit more than I can because she knows a little bit more about it. But Susan, kind of just help us out and get us to understand about the donation at Macon State and what happened with that one.
One of the ladies whose husband is at Macon State decided that she wanted to offer to buy a bar of soap of Lever or Dial, something that's an antibacterial soap for every inmate at Macon State, and that's over 1,700 inmates. And she got in touch with the prison, asked could she do that, and was told no, they were not accepting donations. Wow.
Yeah, I've heard that same thing myself, and I'm hoping that not that I have any clout or anything, but since I'm not related to anyone in the facilities and I am a minister with the Department of Corrections, I'm hoping that might help me in the sense of them accepting it. I'm not saying it will, because we all know how the Department of Correction works. But that's what I'm kind of hoping that they will. That's how I'm going to approach it as a minister from my organization and just say that we just would like to donate this to your facility. And I'm going to let them know what facilities that I actually go in as of right now. I do 5 prisons in the state of Georgia, so I'm hoping that that will help me to be able to get it in.
Right, and Larry, I'm not trying to put you on the spot here with this question. So, you know, don't take it the wrong way or anything like that. But kind of give me your take on why it's possible that it's so hard for the department to take donations. I mean, you know, we contact you, and I'll just give the listeners just a little a background. We contact you to try to get it to get this soap in or whatnot, because there was just it's just so hard to, you know, go through to the Department of Corrections to try to get things distributed out. So we contacted you, but why do you think it is that it's so hard to get these donations into the population's hand?
Well, I believe it's because they have been burnt so much in the past, and they just automatically assume that everybody that tries to do good has a motive behind their actions, whether it be trying to sneak contraband into the facility. And so, therefore, they just feel that everybody's up to no good. And they just their best way to look at it is, we just won't do it at all. I was doing care packages for a facility that I go to at Christmas. And we was given hygiene products for the whole facility. And it took me forever before they would allow me to bring these items in to distribute to the guys for Christmas. And I just think that my feelings is they just feel that everybody's up to try to get something in that's not supposed to be there. Which, you know, the things that we take in, like the soap that we have here, is everything's wrapped in boxes. You know, it's not like it's going to be in our wrapping. It's coming straight from the factory.
Right.
And that's a lot of times that's what I try to do if possible. If I get a facility that says, hey, we'll, you know, we can do that, I just try to get it shipped straight from the manufacturer straight to the facility. And then it just kind of takes you out of the equation of any wrongdoing.
Right. And that's what, that's kind of, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead.
No, and that's what I was kind of trying to explain to some people, you know, this week. And I think on yesterday too, you know, we get so many messages now about folks wanting to donate and you know, they ask all the time, well, can we get it shipped to us? And then we mail it to the person. And, you know, I was actually telling Jennifer yesterday, I said, you know, my guess is, and I just kind of, you know, piggybacking and agreeing with you, is my guess is that, you know, they're kind of, you know, not wanting to, they just don't know what's possibly in the, what's in that package. So it's kind of, that's probably why, you know, they kind of throw up a red flag when trying to, you know, when people trying to get the stuff sent to the prisons or whatever the case is. But, you know, I guess that was my biggest thing too, and I try to, you know, get people to understand is, you know, if we can get it sent to, you know, a person that's going there, and kind of, you know, then they can distribute it. I can't talk this morning. They can kind of get it out a little faster, and, you know, Department of Correction knows those, you know, knows the ministry that's coming in, and, you know, so I think that, you know, it's people are wanting to give things and whatnot, but, you know, I think the red flag is you know, like you just said, the contraband that may try to come into the facility.
And just an example, there was and it happens a lot through, it's sad to say, but ministers, you know, when money starts getting flashed around, but one prison that I go to, a minister was donating a keyboard to the facility. And when it arrived, they ran it through their scanner and found out that he had taken the insides of the keyboard was completely stripped out, and it was packed full of cell phones and cell phone chargers, and so
wow.
things like that just kind of, you know, when you have people that are pastors that are doing the same thing, it just, it kind of makes it, you know, just that one bad person makes it hard on everybody that are trying to do the right thing, because not everybody's bad. You know, in a time like right now, when they really need stuff is when it makes it the hardest.
I agree.
And like I said, I go to five prisons. My intentions are to try to get these into the ones that need it the worst. If worse comes to worse and I'm having no luck, then I'm going to talk to some of the chaplains of where I do go. The main goal is just to get it into the facility so it can be used by the guys.
Right.
But I'm pretty confident it's going to be in a facility by the end of the week. Which ones, as of right now, I'm not exactly sure.
Right. Susan, you have any questions or comments for Larry?
No, I'm just grateful for the ministry that he has and for the opportunity that it presents in this pandemic. I don't think anyone's going to question what Larry Wood's motives are.
Sure. No, and I think that go ahead, Larry. I'm sorry.
I was just wanting to tell the people that have supported you guys with purchasing these items that I just want them to know that everything that they have given has went, that I have the proof sitting right here in front of me on my porch. Because I know a lot of times when people give, they all, again, people's always thinking, well, what is he doing or what are they doing with my donation?
Sure.
I have the donation sitting right here in front of me. I'm looking at it as we speak. So the money definitely went to exactly what it said. They said, you guys said it was going for, so they can just be, have a little bit of ease as you know, you do ask for donations to help fund, because it takes money to fund ministry.
Oh, absolutely. And I wanted to also just to add to that as well. We're trying to get more soap. I think I asked Larry a couple of days ago, if you could use more soap, if we got it to you to get it out. So, but you know, I think that we're going to, people need just to rest easy to know that eventually, and I was talking to Jennifer about this last night as well, just to rest easy to know that, you know, eventually we're going to get this, we're going to get it dispersed to the guys, and you know, just be patient. You know, it may not be this week because they do have a lot going on, but we are trying very hard to get it in to the guys, and you know, it's a bunch of hoops and things like that, but it's actually, we're definitely trying. So, but I do appreciate Larry saying that about the donations that's received, and you know, actually getting into the facilities, because a lot of people will question, you know, if that donation is actually, you know, going for that. So I appreciate you saying that.
Oh, you're very welcome.
All right. Well, I know you are you're a busy man this weekend, and I appreciate all you're doing for us, and we hope to get you some more soap and some more items to hopefully try to get into these facilities as they come in. So I definitely appreciate you, brother.
Yes, sir. Thank you guys so much.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Y'all have a wonderful day and a happy Easter to y'all.
Absolutely.
Thank
you too. All right, Susan. So I don't know. I think you kind of went off on me earlier before. I looked at the screen and it said that the call had dropped. So I don't know what happened.
Yeah, but we're back. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that was good to get Larry on. You know, just to let everyone know what's going on with the money that they're donating and things like that, because these guys need it. I hate that, you know, at some facilities they're not accepting donations and things like that. So we're gonna continue to try to, you know, get some stuff in. you know, of what they need, because I mean, you know, I think it's a real dire need of what they need.
Absolutely. I hear every day, and I know you do as well, this facility does not have cleaning supplies. They don't have soap. They don't have, in cases, they got nothing. One facility took worn-out blankets and tore them up into, like, 12-inch squares to use as rags to clean.
Yeah.
I don't know. You and I were talking last night about growing up and our mothers saying, scrub this, and she didn't mean spray it with bleach.
Yeah. Right, yeah. She, like I was telling you last night, I know when I was had to do chores and things like that, I would always, my mama would tell me to go in there and don't just spray it. You better go in there and scrub it too. And so, you know, I'm not really not understanding what's it doing when you're just spraying something with the bleach and you're not actually scrubbing or wiping down anything after you spray it. So.
I mean, cleaning and sanitizing is a two-step process. One is the removal of the soil. And there's actually science to what makes up soap. It changes the surface tension of the water so the molecules can bind with the soil itself and lift it away. It's a surfactant. And the more suds you get, the more opportunity it is to actually collect the soil. So suds matter. You know, we've all had soap that you couldn't make a lather out of. Well,
right.
That's kind of important. Just kind of important.
Right.
When you clean. But you, I mean, if you wash your car, I'm pretty sure you don't skeet it off.
Yeah.
And I am completely befuddled by this. I know that it has no basis in fact as far as being a valid way to clean anything.
Right. And you know, I think that I don't even know, and I haven't heard, and I'll try to find out for our listeners and kind of update them when I do find out. But I don't even know if they're going into these facilities and they're spraying this stuff down, but we don't actually know if the administration at these facilities are actually going behind them, behind the crew that's coming in and spraying, and we don't know how well the administration is making the emphasis on keeping the dorms clean and actually scrubbing down showers and surfaces. And you know, we just don't know, and I'll try to ask, you know, I think I did read something at one facility, and I can't remember exactly where at the time, but I mean, a couple facilities hasn't even saw their wardens in weeks since this pandemic even took place. So I don't know how well they're stressing keeping, you know, these facilities clean. I can tell you from my experience on being in the facility that they're just filthy. And I think that's kind of on both parts. The people that's there doesn't keep it clean. And then the administration as well doesn't emphasize on keeping things clean and to keep down on germs. I mean, you just got to think about it. When one person gets sick just because of their conditions that they're in, their living condition, when one person gets sick, everybody's going to get sick, especially in open dorms and things like that. So I haven't heard, and I'll try to ask, you know, just find out on how they're keeping the emphasis or if they're emphasizing keeping things clean or whatnot. But I don't know. Have you heard anything on any of that?
Joshua, I have not heard that any steps are being made, and in particular where the open dorms are, that's going to be where people are at most risk because of their exposure and they're so close to each other. The CDC published a guidance document four corrections facilities. Now, I read it. I mean, it's boring reading. But one of the suggestions was in dorms or any place that there's bunks, even if you've got a cell that's a two-man cell, that the sleeping arrangements should not be head-to-head. So they should be alternated head and foot so that the person who is breathing down at your feet, not both breathing at the, you know, within 3 feet of each other. That's
right.
A way to achieve 6 feet. And, you know, I tried to picture an open dorm with 100 people trying to rearrange their sleeping so that everybody is the farthest point away they could be. It seems really unrealistic to me that that would happen.
Well, I think, and I posted a picture last week from a TC facility. I don't know if you saw the picture or not, but I mean, the picture of the inside of the dorm, there's a three bunk high, they're three bunk high in the dorm, and they are literally what's inside of those cuts. There's not even maybe a foot and a half of space between the head of the one person and the head of the other person that's on the bottom bunk, which is looked like that,
yeah,
that was on the floor. But I don't know if you saw that picture, but I mean, we can tell right now, or we can tell from that picture there that those guidelines aren't being followed by the Department of Corrections.
No, I saw that picture and I thought that's about as uncomfortable an arrangement as you could possibly have to be sleeping 4 inches off the floor. I mean, everything about the prison experience is pretty sad.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, so, you know, we got to, I believe that we have to, you know, we have to keep on, you know, bringing these issues to light. And you know, because they're just horrible conditions, they're deplorable conditions. We have a commissioner of the department that's you know, not doing anything that it looks like anyway to combat this. We have a governor that's, you know, held three press conferences and has not mentioned any word about the conditions of the prisoners, any conditions for the prisoners. And the numbers continue to rise in the prison system. There's nothing looks like being done to even combat this virus. And unfortunately, I hate to say it, but it just looks like it's going to get worse before it gets better. I think we're at three deaths now in the state.
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, I think, go ahead.
I don't know if that's true or not. That's what's recorded. That's all I can say.
Right. You broke up, Susan, so you might try to say
okay,
that point again.
I don't know that I didn't doubt the numbers, but in fact I do.
Right. Well, you know, that we just have to continue to, you know, see what the information that they report, and also try to, you know, get as information that we can possible and get it out there to the public, because, you know, like I said, the information that the department gives out is not always accurate. So, you know, it's our job to, you know, try to get as much information as possible out there. I do want to switch gears real quick because we have about 15, 16 minutes left. And I'll let you kind of touch on this for the listeners and the ones that's going to go back and listen later to the show. The union supply packages is, I guess it's the ordering time for those packages. Do you know anything about it?
It is. That I believe about a week ago, the order period opened for the next package, for the quarterly packages.
Okay. And do you have any information?
I don't. I do know that when the packages were distributed this last time, there was some fights and injuries and robberies and so forth. I hope that there's a better plan going forward to keep people safe. It's unfortunate, but it's a factor here that by them being locked down for so long, to not have store, to take away their mail, to be told you're not worthy of a test, I think we're setting people up to behave very badly when they come off of lockdown.
Absolutely, and I hope the department is ready, because I feel very strongly, and me and you have discussed this, that and we pray that that this is not the case, but you know, we think that it's possibly going to be a lot of things that take place when some of these facilities come off lockdown. I mean, you got to look at it. They've been on lockdown 5 weeks. They've had store call. They're barely getting fed. They're barely getting hygiene items. This is the right time, I believe, for some of them to think that it's okay to act out and to, you know, come up with some type of retaliation against the state for not getting the required items that they need to kind of survive in there. I think family members and loved ones needs to be cautious about when they order this, just understanding that the dates could be changed, and that the delivery dates could be changed, because as people know and can see, we're having a hard enough time myself trying to get in free things to them. So I think that the visitation thing was supposed to be lifted yesterday or today, but I guess that's still in place. People are not able to get in to visit and things like that. So it's very possible that the dates can be changed for delivery of that. But just want to, for everybody to be mindful of the issues that happened last time with the packages. And, I hope anyone that's listening that's actually incarcerated can just, when you get your items, be safe with them. And, I think that there's some alternative motives of some individuals when those packages and when the store call is delivered.
Yeah. I'll try to keep posting reminders about these issues. A lot of times when I post on They Have No Voice, I'll copy and paste the identical post into, I think there's about 6 groups that are working here. And I think it's important that everybody be aware that there may be a need to be very careful.
Right. Yeah, because like I say, it's just, unfortunately, this hot zone was created because I think that the Department of Corrections were just caught off guard by this. And, now they can almost guarantee you they have no plan in place on cleaning these facilities and, getting them back to running normal. It's sad, but I think that, there's possible that you're going to see uncalled for violence break out at some of these facilities. And I don't think that's needed right now. So, I just think that you know, we have to keep an eye on this. And I don't want to be back here in a few weeks and we told you so.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Susan, I kind of also just want to maneuver over to, letting you, if you have anything to say as far as about They Have No Voice or anything that you're working on or you're doing right now to kind of, with everything that's taking place right now in the department.
Well, I thank you. They Have No Voice came about a year ago. And we I had made a commitment when my son got out of prison that there were two things that I'd found so disturbing while he was in that I wanted to follow up on, and I committed to stay involved to do that. One was inmate suicides, and the other was the extreme heat in all the facilities, well, not all of them, but in the facilities and the distribution of ice, the availability of cold water, all of that in that period from the 1st of May till the 1st of October. And those are my two projects initially. This gathered steam, though, as it went on in the summer and other people wanted to get involved with it. And this has kind of morphed into following what happened over in Alabama. In 2014, the inmates in the men's prisons in Alabama tried to get an investigation be made of the Department of Corrections in Alabama. And they were not successful. But they came back in 2016 and had a letter-writing campaign to the DOJ, Department of Justice, requesting that an investigation be opened. And this specifically is about the rights of inmates. That includes medical treatment. In fact, there are about 50 things included as civil rights of inmates. They have rights. They're not protected, and that's what's important. The Department of Justice, the Department of Corrections, in all the states, has a responsibility to keep inmates safe, to have them in a clean environment, to provide them protection when asked, to provide them with decent food, and so forth. But COVID, sadly, falls. It's such a horrible situation. It falls directly into the area of the civil rights of inmates. And
sure,
this civil rights isn't about race like in the 60s with the civil rights movement back then. This is about the civil rights of the incarcerated. And they have them. So, that's what They Have No Voice is about, is lending a voice to those who cannot speak. They can speak, but they will not be heard. And I'm very hopeful that we'll achieve the goal of getting the Department of Justice to open an investigation into the Department of Corrections in Georgia. So
that's what's about. Right, and that's what's needed, to hopefully try to bring some type of change here, and I just wanted to add to it, and all our listeners and Facebook members and in the group, and your group and our group and everything like that, we can't become complacent. There's a lot going on. But we have to continue to fight for everything that we like to get done, family members, and just people out there in general that cares about these ladies and these men, and we got to just continue to fight for them and try to give them a voice on the outside. I mean, like I said, being in the facility, I know it's hard in the inside to let everyone know what's going on in the inside. So, you know, that's why we're here to give them that voice and try to continue to fight. But, you know, we can't get complacent. We can't give up. It gets hard at times, and, you know, we just have to continue to fight and try to get the change that we're asking for the system that's completely broken and that just, you know, doesn't value the human and the civil rights of the incarcerated in the system. So I would definitely appreciate all the things that you do, all the late nights and the early mornings and just everything that you do to what they have no voice to help them have a voice behind the walls and behind the fences.
Thank you. It has turned into a ministry for me. This isn't about me, but how I got here, my son went to prison. He's my only relative. And so
wow.
I was heartbroken, like a lot of brothers are. And all sorts of things went right for him. My son never even saw a fight. My prayer every day was, God, please protect him. And he was protected. It's just phenomenal to me. You can go through prison and not see a fight. And he didn't. Everything went right. He had a 10-year sentence, and he was home in 16 months. And,
wow.
I decided I wanted to pay that forward.
Right.
That's not the experience the majority has. That's not the experience 1/100% has.
Right.
And it's just so special and unique. A lot. And I learned how to navigate the websites and what's on there and so forth. So I'm able to help people with that. Websites are daunting to try to find anything on them. And so
I
try to help with that. But that's how it is. I thought at first that was all about God taking care of my child. And instead, I believe now, in addition to that, God placed me in this position. And I've got a unique skill set from what I did when I'm old and retired, but I worked in the food industry as in upper management for 40 years. And
right.
did all kinds of things, but lots of writing, lots of communication. And so that comes easily for me, including reading things like that CDC guidance for the correction entities. Boring reading, but I can grind through stuff like that and interpret it so that people can take it without having to do that reading themselves.
Right. Right. And with that testimony there, just for all our listeners and everyone, like I said, that's going to go back and listen, just what Susan experienced with her son having the 10-year sentence and getting out in 16 months, just always keep hope alive, continue to fight for him and continue to place it and, continue to be a part of our groups and get the all the good information and relevant information that you receive, and always hope for that good things will happen. I tell everybody all the time, it is Georgia, but sometimes good things happen. Just like with the with Governor Deal's criminal justice reform, which is also needed more in the state. So
We're running out of time, Susan. I think we got like 90 seconds left. It just came in my ear. So, but I definitely want to appreciate you for coming on the show. I apologize at the beginning for the technical issues that we had or whatnot, but you definitely saved, was a lifesaver at the last minute. So I definitely appreciate you.
Glad to be a part of this. There's power in a group of people, and this
Absolutely.
Is something we can affect to change. Let's do it.
Right, and let's do it. So continue to go. If you're just listening for the first time, you don't know anything about our groups. Susan, what's your group?
They Have No Voice.
And you can
and
you can search for that on my group is Georgia Prison News. So you can go to. You can go to Facebook and look for Georgia Prison News, and you can go, and you can also go to Facebook and search for They Have No Voice.
That's right. Join in. We're going to do something remarkable. We are.
All right, Susan. Well, I thank you for joining me again, and we look forward to talking to you the next time.
Awesome, Joshua. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.